It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, as we have what has certainly been a balmy stretch of weather. Very unlike December, but the El Nino that everyone's been talking about appears to be here. And so if you're still interested in hunting ducks and things like that, it's the ground's not frozen and you might still have a little bit of time to go. Seasons are wrapping up in the state. Today I want to talk about a number of things going on in the year-end sort of crush. Next week I'll do my traditional sort of holiday show. But I wanted to talk this week about things happening in Washington and in Illinois, which make you really wonder about how it is we accomplish, and I say this in a positive way, how it is we accomplish what we do in the world of conservation. Also, I'm going to talk about the piping plover, which made an 850-mile journey from Illinois to Georgia. But let me start off with the Land and Water Conservation Fund. We have spoken, as you know, extensively about this on the Great Outdoors Show, and it appears that a lot of hard work by a lot of people may get shoved under the rug, if you will, by an omnibus budget deal in which the Land and Water Conservation Fund would be reauthorized for another 2 years with really without any changes. And from my point of view, and I know that of leading conservationists around the country, that is truly pathetic. And we deserve much more as people who love the outdoors, sportsmen and women, than a Congress that just continues to shovel stuff even though they know that they're wasting millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in this case, on a program that's really not doing what it was intended to do, has been underfunded, and is really just simply a place where legislators can go and slobber at the government trough, get some goodies for constituent groups. It's a program where conservation organizations, to some extent, have made a living. They don't want to see any reforms. Other conservation organizations want to see dramatic reforms because it's a cooked situation right now from the point of view of the way the Land and Water Conservation Fund is delivered. And for those of you who may not be familiar, the Land and Water Conservation Fund is the largest federal program annually funded by offshore oil and gas royalties to fund hunting, fishing, access, boat landings, inner city parks, park districts. It is what funds outdoor recreation in America. $900 million a year is supposed to come into the fund. Congress very seldom appropriates more than $300 million a year. And both the head of the Senate Natural Resource Committee, Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, and the head of the House Natural Resource Committee, Congressman Bishop from Utah, have both said that they want to see fundamental reforms made to the Land and Water Conservation Fund so that it will more effectively spend taxpayers' dollars and so that programs of the highest priority are funded based upon their need and based upon what they will, in fact, do to advance outdoor recreation in America. Pretty common sense objectives, you would think. There's a 9-point position paper that's been circulated that was drafted by the Center for Conservation Leadership in concert with other organizations. It is the blueprint for how effectively the Land and Water Conservation Fund can be spent. And Congress appears to have absolutely no idea, no interest whatsoever in doing what would be right for the people with outdoor interests in America, and that is to deliver a reform of a 50-year-old program that has gotten badly off track. Instead, they just want to simply say, well, we'll go along for the next 2 years as it is. We don't really want to make changes, and 2 years from now, we'll fight over it all over again. And I think that's the kind of situation that makes so many individuals, myself included, really just fed up with the federal government. We know there's a better way to deliver the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Some of the best professionals in America, outdoor recreation professionals, have spent a great deal of time. They have come up with a very simple 9-point solution to reforming Land and Water Conservation Fund that'll give taxpayers more value for their money and the outdoor resources of America a better shake, and as a result, more going to the ground to actually provide boat launches, provide fishing, hunting access, provide wildlife management. But we have a Congress that doesn't seem to care about that. They just, as it looks right now, want to shove it with an omnibus bill going through Congress, wipe their hands clean, and say, visit 2 years from now. And that's the kind of stuff which is why so many people in the outdoor industry just don't understand the ineptitude of Congress. And this is a classic example. It's something that I've been closely involved with, as many of you know, listened for really a long time now, over 2 years, and it doesn't have to be this way. So if you're interested in seeing really truly fundamental reforms for the future of hunting and fishing and access and outdoor recreation in America, contact your legislator, whether it be in the House or the Senate, and tell them that you expect them to adopt a 9-point reform of LWCF that's being advanced by the conservation community, or at least tell them that you expect LWCF to be reformed in a significant way, and not that we just want to have 2 more years and then visit this all over again. It's a very sad situation for the outdoor industry if, in fact, Congress does this. I know that both Senators Murkowski and Bishop hope they don't, but it seems to now be out of their hands and apparently out of the hands of the conservation community as we move forward. Before I go to a break, I want to talk about something that's really rather remarkable, and I guess, frankly, sad also, because Senator Mark Kirk has, last week, in his own words, said that he has, and I quote, "My evil plan for the Mississippi River is to use the Durbin-Kirk plan to have the private sector take over and widen and lengthen all the locks and dams on the Mississippi River so that we can turn the Mississippi River into one huge ag drag strip for Illinois." Let me repeat that. One huge agriculture drag strip for Illinois. Senator Kirk has long been a friend of outdoor recreation and the conservation world. He's been a champion of clean water, clean air, a lot of work on the Great Lakes. The dramatic expansion of locks and dams on the Mississippi and Illinois rivers, the further elevating of water levels in the Mississippi and Illinois rivers, the dredging of the Mississippi and Illinois rivers to turn it into a quote-unquote one huge agricultural drag strip for Illinois is one of the most destructive things we can do for the quality of water in Illinois and for the quality of wetlands. Clearly, the Illinois Farm Bureau and the U.S. Ag Lobby has pigeonholed Senator Kirk and convinced him that this is more important than water quality. What about the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico that is growing every year, this great big dead zone? The cause of it? Nitrogen. The largest cause of nitrogen? Agricultural fertilizers. And being in the agricultural industry myself, I am a champion of agriculture, but I also know that we have to control our agricultural runoff. And the more we channelize our rivers, and the faster we move the water downstream to Louisiana, the larger the hypoxic zone will grow, the worse the water quality will be for the central part of the United States, in fact, for the entire heartland. And what Senator Mark Kirk is suggesting does not take that into account. Part of what needs to be done, and a big part of what needs to be done in the Illinois and Mississippi River watersheds and the riparian areas, is to begin to manage nitrogen, to sequester nitrogen, to take low-lying areas that are poor farmland, turn them into nitrogen farms, and create value in having nitrogen sequestered instead of just transporting it down the Illinois River as though it's on a speed train to get to the Gulf of Mexico. This is not what Mark Kirk is suggesting, is not the solution. And once again, it does not provide for the kind of ecological clean water that we expect in the state of Illinois, and that, frankly, we expect our legislators, federal and state, to be champions of. This is a sellout to the Farm Bureau without any idea of the ramifications to the environment, nor does it understand the opportunity that will be lost. This is a once in probably 25 or 50-year opportunity to get meaningful nitrogen sequestering taking place along the Illinois River. It should be part of a much bigger deal, not just a myopic, how fast can we get the water to flow. So on this one, Mark Kirk, who's been really good on the environment, good on conservation, is not doing us any favors. I'll be back in just a moment with more on The Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter, your host of The Great Outdoors Show on WGN Radio. And now, first, a message from your Northwest and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's a winter wonderland, and it's your playground if you have the right equipment. Well, the 2015 Chevy Silverado is the key to a winter full of activity. With 12,000 pounds of towing capacity, Silverado can tow your snowmobiles anywhere you want to go. Hunting, ice fishing, Silverado gets 24 miles per gallon on the highway. And if you're hunting for a new truck, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer. They have leasing experts who can get you more Chevy for less money with a big fix lease. Chevy Silverado is the first and only pickup to offer 4G LTE Wi-Fi that keeps you connected on the go. It's the longest lasting, most dependable pickup on the road, and that makes it the best choice you can make for off the road. Throw in a 2-year, 24,000-mile free schedule maintenance, and you've got yourself an all-American camping partnership made in heaven. Ask about the Big Fix lease at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer, or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for all the details. Track it down, and oh, by the way, there's no limit.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and thank you for being with me this morning. There is some good news in the slowdown of the Chinese economy. And if you were thinking of putting ivory on your Christmas list or your holiday list, please don't. But there's a reason that the ivory trade is slowing down significantly, which will also mean that we're going to have a slowdown in the fur trade. Slowdown, and that is bad, but the slowdown in the ivory trade is good. China, which we all are aware, has been stagnating. Ivory is believed to be an aphrodisiac in that part of the world. It's highly sought after. There's no question that poaching rings financed by the Far East are the largest right now group taking ivory illegal, rhinoceros, elephant. It's a terrible situation. The price of ivory per kilo last year in China was $1,100. Now it is half that amount. The price of ivory was $2,200 per kilo a year ago in China. Now it's half that amount. It's $1,100 per kilo, which is just unbelievable to think about the value of ivory. And this is why we have such terrible poaching going on. It's no different than the drug trade. The risk-reward is so great that if you are successful at killing an elephant, cutting off its tusks, flying them out in a helicopter, smuggling them, doing whatever you can to get that out of the country. If you are successful in doing that, the payoff is huge. Same as it is with drugs, which is why it's so difficult right now to combat the ivory trade. But China's slowing economy has halved the cost of ivory in just 1 year. So that might be about the only positive you can think of for a slowing world economy. There's less demand for ivory, which means maybe a few more elephants or rhinoceroses will not be destroyed. The illegal ivory trade, as I'm sure many of you are aware, has just been absolutely catastrophic to the big game populations of Africa that have ivory, and poaching organized. They come in helicopters. They come in at night. They are like paramilitary troops, overwhelming the feeble police protection of these animals. Maybe if the price goes down enough, the demand will shrink, and it will come to at least some kind of a situation that can be managed. Fur trade, when China boomed and Russia boomed, was huge. China and Russia being the largest consumers of fur in the world. As the Russian economy slowed a couple years ago, we saw a decrease in the demand for fur going to Russia. This led to a drop in the price, but China and the Far East remain strong. Now we are seeing a decline in the price of fur going to China. This means that we're going to have a worldwide fall in the price of fur. It could be quite precipitous. That occurs. There's not going to be as much trapping. There's not as much trapping. There are far more predators. There are a lot fewer birds. It's a very simple equation. It's the supply and demand. When the price of fur is high, then there are lots of people trapping, and the coyote and the fox population and the raccoon population is kept down as they have no natural predators. But when the price of fur falls, just the opposite happens. Those populations explode. Moving on from furs, I've got about 2 minutes left. I want to talk about a really happy story, and that is this endangered piping plover made it from Illinois Beach State Park in Zion all the way down to Georgia. It is something that people did not expect to happen. The odds for survival, there were 4 piping plover chicks, as you may recall, hatched this summer along Lake Michigan in Lake County. The male parent, which typically cares for the young, disappeared. It was probably eaten by a hawk or a coyote or some other former predator. The young were not fledged yet, and they were potentially, their chances of survival were very slim. But one of these chicks made it 850 miles to Georgia, where it's now spending the winter. Piping plovers have been in a serious decline population-wise. And having them nest in Illinois Beach State Park was really a pretty big deal. It is on Jekyll Island in Florida. It's a known wintering spot for piper plovers. The piper plover is a federally endangered bird. It nests in small numbers in the Atlantic coast, in the northern Great Plains, in the Great Lakes region. But the Great Lakes are where the birds are the most imperiled, and they do winter along the Gulf Coast. An adult piping plover, it's a little 7-inch long bird. That's all it is. But the bird made it all the way from Illinois. They had a leg band on them, which imagine the size of a leg band and be able to be reeded. So the last time we had a successful pair of piping plovers nesting in Illinois was in 2009. Excuse me, the last time we had a pair was in 2009. The eggs were abandoned by the parents. Presumably the male was killed. But prior to that, it had been 30 years before we had a piper plover. I can't say that too quickly. Can you? Piper plover breeding pair in Illinois. The fact that this bird has now made it south, if it has a mate, it will bring it back to Illinois. And it's possible that we will have piping plovers returning next spring to Illinois Beach State Park. So that's a happy story in conservation. Quite a bird to survive against all peril without really the kind of had no parenting from its adults as they both were killed. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll be back next Sunday morning with my pre-holiday show special. Thank you so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.